This is a CBC podcast. Hey, kids, enter the TD Kids Book Club contest, and you could win a visit to your school from one of the TD Canadian Children's Literature Award nominees. And CBC Radio will be there to put it on the air. Visit cbc.ca/kidsbookclub for details. Contest only in selected cities.
Welcome to the best of All in a Day. I'm Michael Munnick, and 5 days a week, I pick one red-hot story from All in a Day on CBC Radio in Ottawa. You can listen again or catch what you missed. Here's today's feature.
When you walk into your local grocery store to pick up some apples, the price per kilogram is usually on a sign above them. But that price doesn't reflect the true cost of those apples. It doesn't take into account the cost of shipping them around the world, the cost of refrigerating them for weeks, or the cost of spraying them with pesticides. And according to Stuart Elgee, if we want to save our planet, that has to change. The University of Ottawa professor is giving a talk tonight called The Wealth of Nature, How Fixing the Economy Can Save the Planet. Stuart Elgee is a professor of environmental law and economics at the University of Ottawa, and he joins us in our studio. Stuart, welcome.
Thanks, Adrian.
Stuart, if fixing the economy can save the planet, how is the way the economy is set up now hurting the planet?
Well, that's a great question. Let me start with where you started, actually, which is a specific example before we get into the machinations of the market economy. How does it affect our life? As you say, when we walk into the store, let's say you wanted to buy a pound of lamb and you looked at it. If that lamb came from New Zealand and it got flown or shipped from halfway around the world, there was a whole lot of carbon emission released in the course of doing that. That didn't cost anybody anything for that carbon emission. So when I pay for that lamb chop, there was a whole bunch of climate pollution involved, but I didn't pay that cost. If I paid the cost, it would cost something like 25 cents a pound more for that lamb chop. Now, in this case, we can grow lamb in Ontario just as easily as we could in New Zealand, and it would make tons of economic sense to do that if we paid the real price. Or bottled water from Europe, right? I mean, we live in the place with more fresh water than any place on Earth, yet when you walk into the store, you see this bottled water from Europe. If we paid the real cost of shipping and trucking that stuff from Europe to here instead of getting stuff from local springs, we would never be buying bottled water from Europe. It would be way more expensive. So the price we pay doesn't tell the environmental truth, and as a result of that, when I buy these things, I'm actually paying to have greenhouse gas emissions. I'm paying to release air pollution unwittingly. I don't want to do it, but that's what's happening as a result of my purchase decision. And it creates this existential angst. I don't like it, but I also don't want to pay way more for things because they happen to help the environment, because me doing it alone isn't going to necessarily solve the problem.
When we take that kiwi from the grocery store and we know that, I don't know, it comes from New Zealand, I'm wondering if we recognize the cost, if we recognize what goes into bringing it to us. Is that the disconnect?
Well, it's a really good question. And the answer is to some extent, right? I mean, to some extent, we all know that our lifestyles, the things we buy, the things we make, the things we invest in, are slowly contributing to the degradation of the planet. We see it around us, and we know that we're accomplices in doing that through our lifestyles. We don't necessarily know the specific costs. I mean, I try to be a green consumer. You probably do, too. But if I wanted to figure out the environmental costs of everything I bought, I'd have to study for a week before I went to the grocery store. I just couldn't shop. There's no way for me to actually figure out all the environmental costs, and I shouldn't have to, because that's what markets are supposed to do. You know, when this is why this talk tonight is about the wealth of nature. If you look at Adam Smith that wrote The Wealth of Nations, he talked about this invisible hand of the market. Basically, the point is, market prices count all the costs, and because of that, the thing that costs me the least to buy also uses the fewest of society's resources. So I'm better off by buying the cheapest product, and society's better off. When you don't count environmental prices, the market is broken. And even the guru of free market economics, a guy named Milton Friedman from the University of Chicago, used to tell his students that my free market theories don't work when it comes to the environment. So the end result is, We walk into the grocery store and we look at, you know, paying 50% or 100% more for organic broccoli, and you have this kind of moment of angst of, boy, do I want to pay twice as much for my tiny little contribution. If the market prices told the environmental truth, green products would be the norm. They wouldn't be boutique items.
Is it possible, though, to change the economy so that the true costs of these products can be reflected? Like, what can be done? It's a nice idea. Mm-hmm. How do you implement it?
Well, I think that may well be the question of our time. If you look at what all the science is telling us, we are using up the Earth's resources faster than the planet can sustain them. And it doesn't mean it's all going to end tomorrow, but we've got to change the course that we're on. And unless we change, if we're going to live in a market economy, market prices have to tell the environmental truth. We don't have any other choice. So we have to do it. Your question is, can we do it? Sure, we can do it. There's two ways to do it. One is just to put a price on the environmental harm. And you can do that through something called a tax or a fee. So a green tax. The other is to do it through environmental markets, things like emissions trading. And we see both of these being debated around climate change right now. So the last federal and BC elections, there was a debate between a carbon tax and an emissions trading system. Both of them do the same thing. They put a price on the carbon emissions from fuel use. You can do that for lots more than carbon. I mean, in Europe, countries have environmental taxes on air pollution, water pollution, pesticides, waste, carbon, all kinds of things. What you're doing is the government is saying, here's the real cost to the environment of doing these things, and I'm going to send the bill to the users of those things, the makers of them. So they start factoring that in, the way they factor in the price of land, machinery, and labor. And all of a sudden, it creates an incentive for companies to pollute less, to use less resources, and for consumers to start buying greener products because they're going to start costing less. So yes, it can happen. It happens. We see it. The plastic bag charge in Ontario is a great example, right? I mean, we all could have been using reusable bags for years, and very few did. All of a sudden, the province brings in a 5 cents charge on plastic bags, and now 75% of people are using reusable bags.
I'm wondering, though, if we actually, to really save this planet, if we have to go beyond what you're saying. Because some people might argue that part of the problem that we have is the commodification of, right, of everything. The fact that we don't really recognize the value of a tree. A tree only becomes valuable when it's cut down. We don't recognize the tree for its treeness, the fact that it basically removes CO2 from the air and puts back oxygen. So I'm wondering if we have to kind of have a different conception of what the economy is and what the economy is for.
I completely agree with you. And I think, to me, it's not an either-or choice. I think we need to increase and improve our appreciation, our understanding of the natural world around us. We need to value it for its own sake. But if we're going to live in a market economy, we're going to have to get our resources from someplace. We're going to have to get wood from someplace. We're going to have to use water. We can't live without having any impact on the world. And at the moment, if you don't put a price on nature, the price is zero. So at the moment, by not putting a price on the value of that tree for carbon or for wildlife habitat, the price we're putting on it is zero. And when that timber company decides what to do about the forest, it says, well, I can make a lot of money by cutting it down for timber, and I can't make any money by leaving it for all the carbon stored in there or the wildlife habitat or the recreation value, so I got to cut it down. In fact, a lot of my research is on how creating markets for the carbon stored in forests will actually make it profitable to preserve the forests, because all of a sudden a company can make money by growing the carbon in a tree and get paid for it. So it'll get to the same result. But if we're going to live in a market economy, we've got to make our moral and economic signals point in the same direction. Right now, they don't.
We're living in perilous economic times right
yes.
now. And there you hear even Gordon Brown the other day said we need to grow ourselves out of the economy. But the biosphere can only grow so much. We can only put so much pressure on it before it collapses. I'm wondering if that's also an issue that we perhaps need to wrestle with, our feeling that we need to grow and grow and grow without any limit.
Sure. Yeah, there's a great quote from the Soviet dissident Alexander Solzhenitsyn that a dozen earthworms can only go on and on gnawing at the same apple for a limited time. And it's true. The world is a finite place, and we cannot have endless, infinite consumption of material resources. Now, what needs to change, I think, isn't the fact that life is going to get better. I mean, we need to have a sense that our life is getting better, but that doesn't mean we have to have more stuff. Life can get better in ways that don't involve more stuff, right? Life can get better by getting to know your neighbors better, by having more time with your kids. So of course, we want to have a world where we have our basic needs met, right? We want to be able to have a roof over our heads, a job, healthcare, education for our kids. And so we need to have an economy to do that stuff. But we don't need to have endless, infinite wealth to be happier. In fact, all the research suggests that there's almost no relationship beyond a certain level of meeting your minimum needs. There's no relationship between increased wealth and increased happiness.
Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds like it's going to be a fascinating talk tonight.
Well, I hope so.
Thanks so much for joining us, Stuart.
Bye-bye.
Stuart Elgee is a professor of environmental law and economics at the University of Ottawa.
That was a highlight from All in a Day. We upload a fresh podcast 5 days a week, so check back and check often. You can hear the whole shot at 91.5 FM. All in a Day is heard from 3 to 6 p.m. with Adrian Harewood. And this just in, you can also hear the show live on your iPod Touch or your iPhone. CBC Radio is now available as a free app. You can listen live to CBC Radio 1, Radio 2, and Radio 3 on the go. There are 19 different live stream options and over 60 of CBC's most popular programs on demand. It's available over 3G or Wi-Fi, so you can listen at home, in the car, or on the bus. This app works on any iPhone or iPod Touch with OS 2.2.1 or higher. There is so much audio available from CBC Radio 1, Radio 2, Radio 3. The app also includes a sleep timer, and you can browse cbc.ca content while listening to the audio. CBC Radio for iPhone or iPod Touch application is free. You can find out more or install it on your handheld thingy. Just visit cbc.ca/mobile/iPhone or the iTunes App Store.
For more on all of our CBC podcasts, head to cbc.ca/podcasting.